everyone. Welcome all. Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 54. Step right up. Step right up, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Portal Gaming Podcast. It's a podcast brought to you by a store called The Portal, located in Manchester, Connecticut. For more information, you can log on to www.timemachineportal.com. Check us out on Facebook, The Portal, and we are on Twitter at PortalGaming60. Howdy, everybody. My name is DeBrant, and with me is...
your co-host, Brian.
And we are excited to bring you episode number 54, entitled, Remember, Concentrate on the Moment. Feel, don't think. Trust your instincts. Because this is our first year voting on the Dice Tower Awards, and that's the advice we need to take in doing this, and, you know, taking it seriously, and whatnot. Yeah, how you doing, Brian?
Yeah, I'm doing well.
Awesome.
Just came out of Frisbee, so that was fun, you know, and now it's getting back into the podcast mentality, so, you know, I'm ready for it.
Yeah. I'm all like, school's out for summer, school's out forever. But I don't think Alice Cooper quotes are really gonna get us very far on titles for song for podcast episodes. So that would have been my one if we could pick Alice Cooper songs.
Yeah, but then that would go against the complete grain of what you've been doing, right?
For what?
For
Oh, Star Wars quotes.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I know. Yes. Yeah, they're all Star Wars quotes.
There was never like an Alice Cooper reference in Star Wars.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Nice. Awesome. Yeah, we'll jump into upcoming events. We got a bunch on our plate today. But yeah, we'll be telling you what we voted for on the Dice Tower Awards. So that's the big focus for today. The one upcoming event we're going to talk about is Silk City Board Game Group, Saturday, July 15th. I think we referenced this last week, and they're going to have a representative from Osprey Games. They'll have a bunch of games there that they'll be showing off. So that'll be fun to have, you know, kind of a company that's heading that up and helping out with a bunch of their games. And it's always good to get the pitch from the people who published and or designed the game or whatever, you know?
Yeah, and even just hearing that perspective, you know, they're kind of getting their feet out there into the community too, which is nice. So it'll be good to, you know, to see what their perspective is coming into a group that's playing games every month, you know, and just kind of hearing from a company that's, you know, you're not necessarily typically putting a face to the name. So now we'll have a chance to do that.
Yeah. And I guess just under here quickly, I was talking to John, and he said that the 40K tournament this weekend, like the 8th edition coming out, was like a huge success.
Yeah, no, a lot of people, like it was crazy. Like we got so many copies of, you know, the starter set and all the like the new releases and whatnot. And it was just like, it was crazy. People were buying stuff at midnight of the release. And then, you know, that weekend we just, you know, sold through a ton of it. So
nice.
It's good to see, you know, kind of amping that up a little bit, getting people excited for, you know, miniatures games again, or, you know, people that had been away from it and hopping back in because of this. So yeah. That's cool.
I hope the orcs are good, because that's who I always play. So we'll have to see. Maybe I'll look through a codex at some point, see where they're at these days. Nice. And we're getting all geared up for Dice Tower Con. You probably haven't even given it a thought.
That's coming up pretty quickly, isn't it?
2 weeks.
Yeah.
So, obviously, we voted here, and then, you know, we got our little sheet from Tom. We signed up to do a bunch of things and help out, and I've just been setting up all sorts of stuff, and meetings and games played with people, and I'm trying to set up a dinner with a whole group from the Dice Tower. Some of the newer people, even, from the Dice Tower family, if you will, or network or whatever, you know, that I've been trying to meet up with and stuff. I feel like it's a big key for us to be there. So, yeah. So, probably be several episodes here that are kind of Dice Tower Con oriented and whatnot. So, that's exciting for us. Awesome. We're just going to talk about two games for what's on your table. And we both played these together.
Yep.
So, we'll just hit them both. So, the first one is Yamatai from Days of Wonder. So, this company is kind of known for producing, like, really nice games. In fact, that's basically what they do. Also good games.
Yeah.
You know, also solid. They're all solid games.
But limited amount of releases every year, and they're really putting their support into those ones that they do put out there.
Right, yeah. Usually, yeah, 1 to 2 games a year. So this Yamatai is designed by Bruno Catala and Marco Brunin, I want to say, is the other guy. And, yeah, published by Days of Wonder. So in Yamatai, you are trying to build buildings on the archipelago or these various islands off of Japan. And the goal is to make Queen Hamiko smile. In fact, that's the subtitle.
yeah, I don't remember that as the...
Yeah, it's not on the front cover, but it's on the side. And so that's what you're doing. So it is a victory point game. You are trying to get victory points for doing these things. And so on every turn, there are these fleet tiles, which determine what boat you're going to get. So you pick a fleet tile. It gives you a certain number and color of boats. So there's all sorts of different colors of boats. And then it gives you a special ability for that turn that you can enact any time. Then you can buy one other boat or sell one other boat of any color. Then you place your boats out on kind of the island chains. And at that point, you have a choice. You can either pull the culture tokens off of the islands, or you can build a building on a now empty island where there isn't a culture token. And like four of the islands start, I don't know, there's probably 35 islands in there or something, 36 islands, and four of them start empty. So you already have a place you can build if you want to. And yeah, you can build a building. So in order to do that, you have to have, there's a bunch of building tiles out. And you have to have the right color boats around the island. So that's what you're trying to do, is get the right color boats so you can build a building there. And that'll score you some victory points. All victory points are at the end of the game, basically. But that will let you do that. And then there's all sorts of different things. You can build special buildings that are worth more points. And then if people build adjacent to special buildings, or if you build on a mountain tile, you get a bonus point. If you start chaining your buildings, you get coins. And you can use coins to buy other boats or to give you victory points at the end of the game. And then those culture tokens can be spent to buy specialists. And specialists are at the top of the board. And you can buy one of those by trading in those tokens. And that gives you like unique powers that you can use all the time. And there's a bunch of those. And they do different things. So that's basically the gist of Yamatai. The playing of Yamatai is pretty straightforward. There's a couple tricky parts. At first, you can just kind of place boats from starting locations. And any color can be next to any color. But eventually, when you want to chain off of a previous chain, you have to start with a boat of the same color as the end of that chain. And then everything's fair game. And that sounds simple, but that concept is tough. It takes a couple turns to kind of get that down. But playing Yamatai is thinky. So this is definitely easy to play. Relatively easy to play. I don't want to put it in the easy, light category. Yeah. The mechanics are pretty straightforward. You'll get them and you repeat every round. It's just that one decision choice of, do I get culture tokens or do I build? That's a little tricky for people just to kind of wrap their head around. And but the decisions are definitely deep, definitely leading to some AP. Definitely has a reminds a lot of people of Five Tribes, even though I think they're pretty distinct. You don't have the Mancala mechanism here, but you are placing chains that you then set up for other people, and those specialist tiles are definitely like the cards, what are they called, in Five Tribes.
Which ones?
The cards that you get on the side with the magicians or the genies.
Like the djinns?
Djinns, yeah. They're like those. It definitely seemed like in this one, like in Five Tribes, you may be like, ooh, there's all these great djinns, but you may acquire one in a game, and somebody might have a strategy of acquiring multiple. Definitely made it easier to get these specialists in this game, which kind of gives people asymmetrical powers, kind of akin to Blood Rage, in that you start without asymmetrical powers, but you gain them as you go through the game. So
yeah, and I know, like, I had only played it the once with you as a two-player game, and I think you had even mentioned as like with higher player counts, it's going to be a little more difficult, you know, just to kind of ramp that up and really go with, like, you know, this whole tableau full of those, you know, those special powers or whatnot. So, you know, but I mean, a lot of it is kind of that back and forth. And with the two-player game that we played, like, a lot of it seemed like trying to really balance out, like, the turn order, you know, because that can be variable. And we had, each person had two turns in a round, basically, you know, and those could be, you know, one right after the other or split up or whatnot. But there's a lot of play there where it felt like you could either set yourself up for something to try to play to that, or like you were saying, like with the Five Tribes feel, like a lot of that could be like feeling like you're setting up your opponent for something that they're going to be you know, in better position to score a ton of points on. And that's just where the thinking comes into play, where I feel like you're comparing it to that other game, to Five Tribes specifically, because that dynamic is there.
Right.
Even if it's not, like, I guess, and that's just where, like you were saying, like, the turn is pretty straightforward, but trying to maximize the points that you can get from what's available, like, I feel like you're eventually just going to have to go with a decision that you think is correct and hope that it is. And then if you set up your opponent for something better, that's just part of the game. And right. That was kind of the same way with Five Tribes.
Yeah.
So, but I really did enjoy it. You know, I want to explore it a little more, maybe try with, you know, a larger player count and see how that compares. But two player was fun. I definitely play it again.
So I started a game with two just to kind of learn the game. We didn't finish because it was kind of later at night. We just wanted, or I think I was leaving to go
somewhere.
That
was a different time? Yeah.
Yep. Then I played with you two-player. I played a three-player game, and my wife and I played a two-player game again last night. Second time we were playing. It felt much quicker, but it still went 90 minutes. Like, but it didn't feel so crazy. We kept extending the game because we kept putting boats back when you run out of boats of a color, but we kept using that tile to remove like green and brown boats, which run out first. So the game definitely extended. We had a lot higher point totals, you know, in terms of that. So that was part of it. Yeah, I really agree with you. Like, I really like the game. I really do. I don't know how to compare it to, like, in terms of, am I going to play this instead of Five Tribes? Yes, right now, because it's the new hotness, and I like that. I like introducing people to new games. Maybe eventually I'll get sick of this and dig Five Tribes back out and then play it and be like, that's the better game. Off the top of my head, what makes Five Tribes better is there's more opportunities to score in different ways. And so there's more strategies to try in terms of that. Yamatai feels like there's take culture tokens or build buildings, and culture tokens leads to getting a lot of specialists and kind of guaranteeing certain things, you know, maybe scoring a bunch of points from like the fans. And then the other route of like chaining a bunch of buildings, getting a lot of coins and building a lot, you know. And it feels like those are just kind of two paths. I haven't found like a third path that exists there in the playing that I've seen. Whereas Five Tribes feels like it's got collecting of resources. It's got the different colored meeples. It's got the gins. It's got the having the yet like each color meeple is its own category for scoring. Well, the purples especially add those tokens in the expansion. I think that's huge. Artisans of Nikala.
Yeah.
I don't know that I care. It's obviously because of Days of Wonder, because of Bruna Cathala, because of a similar feel. They're going to be compared. I think ultimately Five Tribes seems like the better game to me. But I'm really liking Yamatai. My one hesitation, which I think I said to you, is because of that AP inducement, do I want to, like, is this that game I'm going to carry under my arm and say, oh, you got to try this. Oh, you got to try this. And keep teaching it to new groups and constantly re-explain. I love teaching games, so that's great. But do I really want to sit there while one person hem and haws and the next person hem and haws? I think this is a game I want to take Thursday night, set it up, teach people to play, and say, great, you got it, you're on your own.
Yeah.
And not play along with new people every time, because I think, I don't know, I'll have to see where that four-player count is. Definitely in the two-player where you have the two pawns each, that's even more AP-inducing. Mm-hmm. So I think that leads to a two-player game still also being 90 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think, like, to me, it doesn't feel like people are going to be going crazy about this one in the way that Five Tribes had this, like, all this buzz around it and then just, you know, was doing really well. It would be interesting to me to see if Days of Wonder continues support with Yamatai, you know, and releases, like, some expansions or whatnot.
Yeah.
Because I think that would be a little more telling as far as how the community embraces it. Because, you know, right now we're even looking at it, like, when we're comparing the two games, we're comparing Five Tribes with a really solid expansion, you know, to a base game of Yamatai, you know. So it would be interesting. I want to see what they do with it, but, you know, only time will tell on that end.
Now, when I was there Thursday, we didn't have any copies. Did we sell through our initial what we got?
We got a limited amount initially, yeah.
Because it's a store-only release, right? Retail-only release?
So, yeah, we'll need to bring in a few more, but...
But those sold through. That's a good sign. I mean, initially, I don't know what you had for pre-orders and whatnot. They may have already been taken and you knew that, but that's just a good sign to me. Like, there weren't any out when we got the pre-release, so that's great to know. Yeah, I think it's worth a try for almost everybody, though. I mean, you know, the game is gorgeous. I mean, I think it's even better looking than Five Tribes. Like, just these bright colors, like I think you had said, just that Japanese feel. It's just got brighter colors, and the culture tokens are... I think the game is stunning. The only person I played it with that really commented significantly on that was my wife, too. The backs of the fleet tiles are, like, amazing art. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just really neat. I just
didn't like the coins weren't, like... Because they're the coins with the hole in the middle.
Yeah.
But the cut wasn't all the way through, so I was, like, punching out the centerpiece of all the coins, and it was, like, tearing on the other side of the, like...
now I see why you don't like them. Gotcha.
That was the only reason, that was my only problem with it. And that's probably case by case, depending on what you've got for a punch through. But that's the only, that was my only negative on that end.
Gotcha. Yeah, the game is just, I love it on the table. I think it's beautiful, so. All right, that is Yamatai from Days of Wonder. Do you want to tell us about the next one?
Yeah, so we got a chance to play Baron Park from Mayfair Games. And that was... You know, it's a pretty straightforward tile laying game where you're trying to build out a zoo with only like only bears, right? And each person starts off with, you know, one main tile where they can put the smaller tiles that they're drafting from. Basically, they're putting them onto their park, which is kind of laid out as a grid. And when you take a tile that represents the different, like, you know, cages or exhibits for the bears, you take one of those, you put it on your grid, and it'll cover up some other things where it'll be like some construction vehicles or whatnot, which signify that you can draft another tile from the center pool, you know. And there's some limitations, like there are specific vehicles that let you grab from different pools of tiles, but it seems pretty straightforward. Like you're doing that and kind of progressing, adding it up, and really trying to use that spatial element of filling up your board to the best of your ability. And there is a space on your board that lets you basically take a new section to expand your zoo. So you kind of keep going from like your basic grid. You add, whenever you add to your display, you'll be basically adding a full new grid to your tableau, and now you've got some more space to play off of it. And then you've got those other like the same type of spaces to cover up to get new tiles. But you know, we played one game, a four-player game, and it was neat. It seems like there is a little bit of variability, because there are some goals where maybe you're trying to get a bunch of pandas in your display, and the first person to get what we had was like three pandas or something. Mm-hmm. The first person to do that would get a bonus tile, which was 10 points, which is, you know, a pretty good amount, like, for not really doing much else. And then there are a couple other things, like you get benefits from filling up your section of your board or whatnot, like one grid, you get a bonus for doing that first. And, you know, each person has a chance to do that as well. But the other thing, like, there was a bonus where if you got one of each of four different types of exhibits in your zoo, then you got one of those bonus tiles of like 10 points. And mm-hmm. first person to do it gets 10 points. Then was it like 9, 8 or something? It goes down.
Two,
yeah.
8, 5, 2.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it definitely rewards that first person to get it, but it's still beneficial later in the game as well. But I don't know, I it was fun. Baron Park is not gonna be like the high end of the heavy, like the heaviness rating.
It's definitely be on the low end of the heaviness, right?
Yeah, but it was still fun. Like it was nice to play, and just, you know, it felt like it played pretty quickly, especially once people kind of had whenever you draft a tile, like you don't place it immediately. So it felt like people were kind of wanting to do that a little bit. But once you kind of got the flow of that, it was really fun. Like, it was pretty quick. And, you know, it's a good lightweight filler style game.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I know you've played it a few more times, but...
Yeah, no, it's real light. It's super light to me. So, like you said, I don't know when I'm going to bring that out. I mean, it's even lighter than something like World's Fair, and I like the decisions better in World's Fair. So if I'm like, I know it's a tile laying game. I'm just right. looking at, like, if I'm at my house and people are coming over and I'm looking for something light, four player, I'm probably going World's Fair in this case. But I yeah. like this, like, on the shelf at the store. This is a great game to point to people that are there and I'm in another game and people are like, oh, you're looking for something to play? Oh, do this one. Like, they can read through the rules. They can figure it out. They can play on their own, like, at the store. Mm-hmm. It's a good play time, like, 45 minutes to an hour. It seems perfect for that. Like,
do you consider it light because you kind of, like, does the spatial element of it work for you? Like,
it does.
I feel
yeah,
like,
I don't have any issue with that.
Right, but I feel like that's kind of where that's coming, like, where you're coming at it.
Yeah.
Like, you feel it like it's very light because that spatial aspect of it. Like Patchwork is another good example
Could
of something that's like that. You know, and it's not like people are saying that's the lightest game ever. You know,
right,
like
sure.
there's still dynamics there that make sense. And it's trying to think through that and best utilize that spatial reasoning.
No, it's definitely light with choice. It's
mm-hmm.
not light with dice rolling, right? Like, that's different. It's not just roll the dice, that's what happens. But it's
right.
like, okay, there's choice to this. Like, where do I put the tiles? What am I trying to do?
Mm-hmm.
And it's nice then that I don't know that you ever look back and go, oh my gosh, that was totally the wrong move. I should have done this. Like, it might still be okay. It's not like one of those games, like a Euro, where you figure out, like, oh my gosh, that was exactly the wrong move, and this is what I should have done, and now it's a train wreck from here. Like, you can kind of pick it back up and get the pieces. You start getting those bigger pieces later, but without places to put them, so. But yeah, no, it's a fun, solid game. I love the pieces are nice and chunky. The theme is super fun. Building a bear park is cool.
Yeah.
Like, as much as it's, you know, that's just something different. It's way better than building a medieval countryside with farming, you know, like,
now we're gonna get hate for that. People that love this,
so, you know, of King Domino, which I love King Domino, but like, why am I building a medieval countryside? Why can't I be building a mall or something more exciting, you know, or a theme park? I think that'd be great for King Domino. So I guess they're going for the kingdom, so I'll give them that. But they could have changed Mall Domino. Maldom.
I don't think I'm gonna play that.
Mall Madness. All right, that's what's on our table. Let us know what's on yours. All right, for our discussion topic today, we are going to run you through how we voted on the Dice Tower War. So this was our first year voting for the Dice Tower Awards. We joined the network in September, officially. Yeah, it's just been exciting. It's cool to be on the network. We're probably one of the smaller podcasts on the network, but it kind of fits with what we're doing. We're trying to be about a local store, you know? So I suppose first and foremost, we're for the local community, but I just think it's neat for people to see, like, what's a local store doing with its local community, and then kind of sending that out publicly, nationwide, worldwide, whatever, so people can kind of just hear that little piece. Obviously, you manage the store, and so you're much more on that front, and I do the podcast and publicity for the store, but I just think that's unique. That's cool. That's one thing I like about the portal, is that it has a unique outlook on how it does that. It's not just, well, this is, you know, what we do. So this is our first year. We get to vote for Dice Tower Awards. We're going to Dice Tower Con, so we'll be there to see our preciouses here be voted on. And less talk, more focus on this. Ready? All right, we'll just go through the categories and see what we have here. So, best game from a new designer. I actually don't have all the games down. I have what I voted for. So,
oh yeah,
we'll have to go from there, but that's fine. I think this one is going to be a landslide. I think Terraforming Mars is a shoo-in. I have that as my number one. Do you?
Yeah.
And I put Vast the Crystal Caverns as my number two.
Yep, same for me.
And I didn't vote a number three.
Okay, yeah, I put Adrenaline out there as another one, but I don't know. I guess I wasn't as, like, the first two felt like a lot more
mm-hmm.
more solid than that third space, but.
Yeah, I only got the one play of Adrenaline with Paul Grogan, so
yeah.
I think that kind of might have left me, like, I don't know that I can say that that's a, I mean, it is a play, it's technically a demo, but we played the whole game.
Yeah.
And it was a great game, and I love learning from Paul Grogan. Mm. Great teacher, but it just wasn't enough for me to say, yeah, here's a game, you know, but these other ones I played a bunch. And,
right.
Terraforming Mars is amazing. Next one is Best Artwork. So this one's interesting because all the nominees are really good. They're really nice. Inish is going to be the one that's going to be the most controversial because some people like that and some people didn't like that artwork. Although I've mostly heard people saying they like it because it's so unique.
Yeah.
Even if they said, I don't know, it's my favorite. I like the idea that they went with something unique. But I voted Scythe number one. I think you had referenced this a while ago, but like, with the story attached to it, like, oh, the game came from the artwork. Yeah. It just feels like it gets like a boost, like, in what it's doing. And I mean, the artwork is great. I put Islebound at number two. Ryan Lockett just does such a great job. I don't know when he'll win one of these.
Right.
It's very whimsical art. It's very different, but I mean, clearly it's awesome. And I put Kanagawa number three. That art is just a cool part of that game because you are painting. So that was
my order. So I was kind of similar. I mean, I had Scythe number one, and then Kanagawa number two, and then Inish number three. So I was thinking, you know, I don't think Inish is going to win, but I was impressed by the that style, and I wouldn't want every game to look like that, but I'm glad that one did.
Yeah, that's a good point. It works great for that game. Awesome. Best theming? So, for this one, I had Terraforming Mars number one. I mean, I really like the game. I still felt like I know there's a lot of Mars-themed games now, but this one was announced a while ago. This and First Martians were kind of the first that were around. And, I mean, you are, like, it's a Euro through and through, but you are doing exactly what the game that Box tells you. You are terraforming Mars.
Yeah.
And, I mean, if you want to say, just the idea that's based on hard science and all those cards, like, there's somebody out there's going to say, oh, that's not possible, that's not, but, like, they seem pretty dead set on, you know, what they're doing. I guess the biggest attraction there could be that artwork that's sometimes pictures, sometimes drawing, sometimes, you know, weird other things. But that theme's really cool. Captain Sonar, I just think that's cool. Like, you're sitting down, you're in your subs, you're listening to each other talk, you have somebody, like, that's a cool theme. And I pick Black Orchestra. I think that's a really cool theme. I mean, Black Orchestra is you are trying to kill Hitler. and, I, you know, that's exactly what the game is about, and that's a unique theme. So I didn't particularly like the game. The game was just kind of bland, but it was doing exactly that. It was kind of a pandemic style move around and things come up, but it was focused on that. And that's a cool, I want to kind of vote for that to say, hey, here's a unique theme. I want to see more unique themes like this.
Yeah, I voted for Terraforming Mars three times. no, I didn't vote in this category. I didn't feel like I'd played enough of them. And
is this because you don't like theming games?
I didn't say that.
Gotcha.
But I didn't think, like, I would have put Terraforming Mars there, but that's really not fair to the other games because I hadn't played most of them. Or, you know, it didn't come out from the games that I really played, so.
You know, we never mentioned how we can vote. So we can vote 1, 2, 3. Whatever we vote for first place gets 3 points, or 3 votes, if you will. Yeah. Second place is 2, and third place is 1, and we can choose to not vote. So, like, the first category, I voted 1 and 2, so I didn't want a third thing to get any votes to move above those. So you could technically just vote all your number ones to give them the highest weight. But I feel like when I vote for the three, it's because I want all three to get nods. And if any of them win, I'm okay. My number one is my number one, but I'm not tied to it. And I don't know. It just seems right to me to vote for three when I can, personally. There's that. Okay, best two-player games. I voted Rebellion, number one. I voted 13 Days, Cuban Missile Crisis, number two, and Codex Card Time Strategy. Codex Card Time Strategy could be my favorite of these three, but nobody will play it with me. Now, Rebellion, barely anybody will play it with me, but I've played it plenty of times. I mean, I played Rebellion not 10 times, but somewhere up there, maybe 7 or 8. It might actually be 10. And it's just amazing. It's just awesome. 13 Days, I played a ton. Anybody will play with me. That's almost a gateway game. Like, I can almost sit down with somebody and play it. And it's really, really good. And Codex, like I said, if I got more than, I mean, I probably played it 5 or 6 times, but it's so short. I haven't, like, mixed up decks and tried different things and switched stuff up. and done all that. And I really, really like the game, and everybody I've introduced it to, you were like, that's not my game. And other people were like, that was cool. And my wife was like, I don't know if I want to think through all that. Like, I don't really want to play this again. And there's my two-player. Like, it's just one of these games that maybe randomly. I did play it one time with somebody who was at the store. Actually, twice now. And those were fun. So, those were my votes.
Yeah. I had 13 Days, Cuban Missile Crisis as number one. Then I had Arkham Horror, LCG.
Mm-hmm.
And Star Wars Rebellion snuck in there at three. Because, you know, I think those were pretty good. I don't know. It wasn't the best year, I don't think, for two-player games, but those are still solid games nonetheless, you know.
There weren't really any small ones, like a Patchwork or a Lost Cities. The ones that end up in this category were pretty, you know, pretty big.
Yeah, no, but I mean, it's good. I think, you know, I guess there are other games that I'd be playing before these, but they're still good. You know, I guess mostly what I'm thinking of is going to be like the Lord of the Rings LCG over Arkham, you know, maybe like even if it's Twilight Struggle or something over 13 days, like, it's just a matter of timing for that. But I don't know, it's still good. Like, those are good games, and I'd be glad to see any of those win.
Nice. All right, next up was Best Reprint. This is a category I could have voted just one game. I mean, okay. The best reprint is Arkwright. That game is amazing.
Yeah, but how are you, like, what's the... What are you thinking for the...
Right,
like,
well, by the title reprint, it implies that they did something different with the game.
Are you thinking it's, like, biggest difference from first to second? Or
no,
best to get to the
market?
No,
what's my favorite of the nominated games.
Okay, that's what you're thinking.
Yeah, and so since they brought this game to the market now, we probably... You know, we probably could have acquired a Spielworks edition, but... you know, just retail-wise, getting the game into regular Capstone did a great job. And that game is just amazing. It's heavy, it's long, it's thinky, but it's so thematic. Like, it's boring thematic. I mean, it's kind of like somebody making a game about doing your taxes, and it literally is do your taxes, and then people score points at the end. And they're like, oh, I did my taxes the most accurate, so I scored points. Like, it's not that brutal. It's not that boring, but
I would play that.
But the theme is just, you know, really good in that game. So, but I did give nods because, yeah, when you say reprint, it's actually like, if you're talking about reworking the game, then my number two, I think, is probably the best reworking, which is Mansions of Madness. I mean, that game was just completely reworked, putting an app in, putting even just nice new touches on everything. Really good. And I gave a nod to 51st State Master Set. I think the one game I played with you was kind of junky. It got one side and it was weird. I played a bunch of games and it's pretty fun. Mm-hmm. It's really neat. And it seemed like they really streamlined it down. I've heard of, you know, this game going 3 or 4 hours. And I mean, every time I've played it, it's been, you know, maybe an hour and 15 minutes with four people. Like, so I did a great job streamlining that and getting it back to something sensible. So those were mine, but I could have just voted Arkwright because I really want that to win. I don't know how it will without enough people playing it, but...
Really no, I good. Think Mansions of Madness, probably, yeah. But...
That's just had so many more people playing it, and that theme. That theme, I really discover, like, Cthulhu does nothing for me. Like, Arkham Horror, the card game, I love Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
But Arkham Horror is, like, there's elements that I really like, but the theme is just... It's literally boring to me. Like... Mm-hmm. That sounds so weird, because I'm sure there's people listening that are just like, that's one of my favorite themes, right? Cthulhu's, like, amazingly good, and I'm not even anti it. It's fine. It's just not, it feels like generic fantasy to me. Like, it's just, all right, there it is.
As opposed to Lord of the Rings?
Moving on. Best expansion. I abstained.
Well, by the way, I matched up your reprint list.
Are you in this discussion too, Brian?
I am. I had the same three in the same order, so.
Oh, nice.
We perfect. Didn't really need to go back, but.
There you go. Sorry about that. Best expansion I abstained from. This was two Time Stories. One I haven't played. One I've done a single run through of. It was Seven Wonders Duel. It was the Scythe Invaders from Afar, which lets you play with seven players, which just sounds like a nightmare. And I don't remember the fifth thing that was in there. And I didn't write them down. So I abstained because I haven't really played any of them except one run through.
Yeah, I didn't vote for this one either, so. We can move right on.
There you go. Best party game. This one I hem and hawed. It's tough between those, the first two for me.
Oh, only two?
I had three.
But
first off, I didn't pick Codenames Pictures. I don't think it should win. I think it probably will win. Because it's Codenames, and Codenames is awesome, and Pictures is fine, but it just feels like when Codenames already won, Codenames, this feels like an expansion. It feels, if I was under Best Expansion, I would have voted for it. And I know it's not, they're changing it up, but it's like, and plus, I'd rather play Codenames. I'm okay with the mixing Pictures in. That's a fun way to play it, but I don't even like all Pictures. Like, I like it better with words. I think that one's probably going to win, but I feel like Shenanigans, like, it should just kind of be Codenames.
I don't know. I mean, there's some other... I guess we could talk through, though.
Yeah, so anyway. So I hem and hawed over the first two, and I didn't know which one to go with, but I went with Captain Sonar as my number one. It is really fun, and it's very unique, you know, in terms of what it's doing, the idea. Number two, I put Happy Salmon. They're very different. I mean, Captain Sonar is something you have to play, and then you have to kind of, like, learn how to play, and almost, like, you know, you can play it the first time, but, like, you get better, and Happy Salmon, you just play. Like, it's just crazy. But, yeah, they both work to me. I think Happy Salmon with the fish, where then you can have 12 people, that's going to be amazing. I mean, that's awesome. So I guess if I had had it with 12 and played that a bunch, I probably would have picked that. Because now you're talking about the 12-person player count. Darn it, I want to change my vote now. I think I like Happy Salmon better. But whatever. If each of them wins, that's fine. And I put Junkart number three. I don't know if this is a party game.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like it. But you need to have more than four.
I guess I liked it, so I voted for it. But yeah, it's like, yeah, we're having a party. So you guys,
just the four of us over here.
We're playing this game, and it's, don't touch the table.
I guess some can play more than four, right?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't remember offhand. I don't know. But yeah, I picked Happy Salmon as my number one.
Nice.
Codenames Pictures was number two for me, just because it has been pretty inclusive for, like, what I've played with, you know. I don't like it as much as Words, but I feel like, or regular Codenames, but I feel like this one might be a little easier to hop into with people that don't, that haven't played a lot of games, or, you know, I mean, even if it's just like people coming at it from a different mentality, like looking at this on the table is completely different than looking at a grid of words.
No, you're right. And it's easy for people to say bird.
Right.
And somehow when they see a bunch of words, they just freeze up. But pictures are like, oh, I could say something that relates to those pictures.
But it's funny, like, I've always had people say, like, why would I be able to say this word when it matches up exactly with, oh, but it doesn't exactly match? You know, like there's always, like you're saying with bird.
Yeah.
If it's, like, very clearly a bird on a card, people kind of have that hesitation of saying that word. But
yeah.
But it's fine. I mean, I like it. Moving on, I guess.
Shenanigans on your vote.
Junkart is my third one. Again, kind of what you're saying holds true. It's... It doesn't feel like that party game, like, in the same sense as the other ones do, but it's still, it's a good game. It should get some recognition for what this category is showing.
Yeah, I'm excited for this year because that Word Slam game is coming out. It's like concept with words.
Yeah, we've got
that. There you go. I gotta play it. Yeah. All right. Best cooperative game. I don't know. I'll just go with it. I went Mechs vs. Minions, number one. I love that game. Played it a ton. Arkham Horror, the card game, finally got some love here. Because that is really fun, and I definitely think I like it better playing with somebody and talking through. And Harry Potter, Hogwarts Battle, I had a blast playing that with my daughter. That was a great game, so that was my number three.
Yeah, I did Arkham Horror, LCG, then Mansions of Madness, then Mechs vs. Minions.
Nice.
But that one could probably shoot up the list a little bit, but this is where we're at now.
That's probably going to be Mansions of Madness again, would be my guess for what's going to... there. But you notice, I vote for what I vote for, not what I think is going to win. Which is probably what we should do. Best family game. Ice Cool, I voted number one. Sushi Go Party, I voted number two. And Harry Potter Hogwarts Battle, I voted number three.
Nice. Ice Cool, Junkart, and Sushi Go Party for
and
me.
We should mention Ice Cool just won the Kinderspiel des Jahres.
Oh, nice. I didn't see the...
Yep.
The announcement for that.
So
that's
one
Kinderspiel, awesome.
And that makes sense because that's a great game.
Yeah.
We had a blast when we played that at Gen Con.
We
were laughing so hard.
It's funny it's here, like, Sushi Go Party is kind of like, I guess when we're looking through this list, like, I like that more than probably junk art, but, like, it feels less like a...
That's funny. Yeah, that'd be a better party game than junk art, right?
Yeah, but it's also kind of that same thing as, like, you were saying for Codenames Pictures. Like, it feels like...
Oh, you're right.
It's
yeah.
an like, it feels like an expansion rather than a new...
But game. Did Sushi Go win prior? Did it win an award last year? That's my thing with Codenames. It's like, Codenames won an award last year, so I don't want to give it another award with Codenames Pictures.
But that shouldn't be your thinking, right?
That's my thinking. All right, and I really like Harry Potter Hogwarts Battle. I got a lot of negative reviews because it's really simple, so I guess it's not a gamer's game. But as you open things up...
It becomes pretty difficult.
It becomes pretty difficult. I mean, people lose a bunch, and...
Yeah.
I just had the best time playing with my daughter. I mean, all the way up, she loved opening the packages. Admittedly, she likes that a little better, like Pandemic Legacy. And when we got to the seventh one, it was kind of like, I don't think she was as excited to finish the game as I was. But I had a blast. I loved it. So I can only go off of, hey, did I have fun playing this game? I absolutely had fun playing this game. Now, would I get my four heavy Euro buddies together and be like, let's play Harry Potter and open it up 1 week at a time and have a blast? Probably not. So I understand that, but that's why it's best family game, right? And I voted High School number one anyway. Okay, best strategy game. I pretty much just voted these like I had them ranked in my 2016 top 10. They haven't moved for me. Terraforming Mars number one, Star Wars Rebellion number two, Great Western Trail number three.
Mine, Terraforming Mars, Great Western Trail, and Scythe.
Nice. So you finally came to your senses on Terraforming Mars. Because I think in the other one you had Great Western Trail.
Yeah, I think I did.
In 2016.
But it's so close. Those two are, like, you know, back and forth for me. And I think just the solo mode for Terraforming Mars just really opened it up.
It is fun.
So
it feels like you're doing what you're doing and you don't have to worry about other players. Like, you're still building that engine and everything.
Yeah, no, I mean, and I think it's just been, like, it's a game that's just gotten to the table so much because of that. And I guess that helps. Like, the nice thing is I've played it so much and it still doesn't feel like I'm done with it, you know?
Right.
So I guess that's just where that's really strengthened with that high play count.
Yeah, I think that'll win. It's really interesting to see with Psy, and I know Psy just won, like, Origins Award Game of the Year. Mm-hmm. And I think right now, if you go to BGG, I think number 6 is Rebellion, number 7 is Scythe, and number 8 is Terraforming Mars, or something like that. They're, like, right in a row. I can't remember where Gloomhaven is in there. It might be that Gloomhaven sneaks in, or maybe it sneaked up to number 5. Snicket?
So they're all just kind of...
They're all right there, yeah. You know? It's crazy. So.
All of your votes?
All my votes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No. Great Western Trail's not as far.
All right.
Best board game production. So I guess this is overall. So I put Mechs vs. Minions number one. I put it over Scythe number two. And Star Wars Rebellion number three.
Yeah, I didn't know how to vote. I didn't vote on this.
Because you don't care.
Yeah.
There were none that came in a paper envelope that you take out a folded sheet.
Right.
And then flatten it with an iron and then put little cutout pieces of paper on.
What game are you talking about?
It sounds exciting.
I want to play that.
Yeah. Mechs vs. Minions just wins. Like, when you open the box, there's presentation. Like, just taking everything apart is really cool. But I know people are going to say Scythe and the artwork is better in Scythe and whatnot. So, again, they're so close, I don't know that my vote's going to make the difference. That'll be interesting to see, though. I'm really interested to see Scythe, because I feel like it was just so big and so huge a year plus ago. And where does it stand now that people are voting over a year later and so many other things have gotten played? And, you know, and Mechs vs. Minions had its bubble in the fall. So, that goes. Most innovative game. I did Vast Crystal Caverns, my number one, Millennium Blades, my number two, and Captain Sonar, my number three.
I did Millennium Blades, number one, then Vast, then Clank.
Nice.
So I'm a little down on that. My wife has not been enjoying that.
That's interesting.
Yeah, she does not like Clank.
What doesn't she like?
I think it just doesn't... I think she wants to keep building up an engine. I think that's what she was saying. She wants to keep building.
It's not just grabbing stuff and getting out and acquiring
not
points.
This timer where it's like, okay, you need to turn that corner eventually and
right.
shift from building an engine. I think she just wants to continuously build that up. And the bag pulls have not been kind of
favorable. Yeah, that can happen. That can happen. I think Millennium Blades will probably run away with this. It's just a matter of how many people have gotten a chance to play it. But Vast just really, it really shook up that whole like dungeon crawl that I love. And I still am floored by somebody being able to create five unique powers that totally different interact with each other. I think that's so cool. I do think Millennium Blades is so awesome. I mean, they're both awesome in what they did. But I gave my nod to Vast because it really wowed me more. I guess I already knew what Millennium Blades did. So maybe it was that wow. Because
you heard about it?
Yeah.
And you weren't expecting
that. I'm the one who got Larry to back the Kickstarter.
Gotcha.
So I had seen it, wanted it, and just at that time did not have the money, and he backed it. But now we have a review copy, so I'll get to play it again. And so you'll be hearing more about Millennium Blades. So, yeah. And Captain Sonar, I think, is totally cool. I think that's a great, great idea. So, definitely gave a nod to that. Best game from a small publisher. Arkwright was my number one, as I talked about before. Vast, Crystal Caverns, and Not Alone, I gave my number three.
Nice. That was pretty close. I had Arkwright, Not Alone, and Vast. So, it was just a different order. Same games, different order.
So, we're right, and that's what's going to happen.
Arkwright will win.
I don't think so. People are like, but I will try. I'm going to try. There's a copy at the Dice Tower Library. I'm going to try to get everybody playing it. So that'll actually be fun after the awards are announced and people want to play some of these games. I bet if I just walk around teaching. You know how excited I am for that. Teacher wanted. I'm there. I've never played this game. Give me the rule book. I'll explain it to you. I'm excited. Just teacher wanted, teacher wanted, teacher wanted.
And then eventually it'll be not Brant or something.
That's right, yeah. Teacher wanted, not this guy. Picture of me with a slash through it. Go away. No, I love doing that. So actually, Tom was talking about that on the podcast today. Do you listen to it?
No, I'll listen to it tomorrow.
Yeah, but Tom and Eric were talking about teaching games, and Tom was saying how he gets just as much joy teaching a game as he does playing. And I mean, that's totally me. I'm almost just as happy. I mean, I'd rather play if I can, I guess, but I'm happy to teach and let people play and just see them excited. Okay, game of the year. It goes right with my strategy games.
Yeah, same with me.
Terraforming Mars, Star Wars Rebellion, Great Western Trail. Those are the best three. Scythe is going to be in there. It just doesn't quite hit home for me. I really did like the two-player Scythe. It was fun, but there just wasn't enough there eventually. It felt like the shine wore off quickly, and these other games just feel like I could keep playing them. I guess you could argue Rebellion getting old, but I love the shuffle of the deck, and then things come out. I mean, Star Wars is always just going to get 10 notches. That's just a theme that's just going to scream for me. But yeah, Terraforming Mars is the best one. It's going to be between that and Scythe. I think Great Western Trail just won't have enough pull, I don't think, even though it got really popular. I was surprised, because it was something I was really interested in, but I didn't know, and it seemed to get really popular. There was
the Which
time
one?
People were playing. Great Western Trail. But Terraforming Mars has just been on a tear. And it's much more accessible, I think, once people learn. A lot of people play without draft. They play the wrong way, without drafting and without special powers. And they start with one resource of every type, which is total shenanigans.
Is that allowed?
I don't know. I'm going to play that way in my solo, you know, the cheat way.
Why?
Because that's how everybody plays the other thing.
Just to pat yourself on the back?
Yeah. So I'll cheat. I'm cheating too. Awesome. Yeah, that's my game of the year. So, woo, go Terraforming Mars, because that's a great game. And it's made by Swedes, so I'm excited about that. I got an American flag and a Swedish flag on the front of my house now. I am also Swedish. Not just because I'm rooting for Terraforming Mars. Although that would be awesome.
Would be something, yeah.
I would really be showing my loyalty to the game. Cool, so those are the games we voted on. Tell us why we are dead wrong and we picked the wrong things and how could we possibly vote for those. You can email us at portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com. You can tweet us at portalgaming60 on Twitter. Awesome, that's it for episode number 54. Remember, concentrate on the moment. Feel, don't think. Trust your instincts. And that's what we did, and that's why we were both rooting for Terraforming Mars to take all sorts of awards, because it's one of our favorites, and maybe I'll just teach this a whole bunch at Dice Tower Con and whatnot. So that pretty much puts a bow on that, Brian. Anything else? Words of wisdom for us?
No.
Okay.
Sorry. It was fun to rehash like all the games though. I mean, that was enjoyable.
Yeah, no, definitely. And it's neat to have 6 months since they kind of all ended, yeah. You know, and to say, yep, these still hold true.
So now we'll look forward to next year's awards, right?
That's right. We're done with these ones, so who cares? Awesome, that's it. New stuff should be coming out. Origins just happened, so there should be some games coming in, and then Dice Tower Con and Gen Con and BGG Con and PAX Unplugged and all sorts of things, and Essen and people releasing games, and us finally getting games from Essen 2016 coming in here. I was just listening to Heavy Cardboard today talk about all these games. I'm like, never played it, because they just haven't come over here yet. So they're hard. You know, obviously there's places to get them and whatnot, but it just makes it more difficult. That is that. We'll wrap up 54. Until next time, I am the Brant.
And I am your co-host, Brian.
And we hope you step into the pool. Portal Gaming Podcast is a product of Time Machine Toy and Hobby Store / The Portal, which is located at 71 and 60 Hilliard Street, Manchester, Connecticut. This episode was recorded on June 20th, 2017. Happy summer, everybody! Please send any questions to us at portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com. Portal Gaming Podcast is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. For more awesome podcasts, visit www.dicetowernetwork.com. Thanks for listening.